the Matt Bubala Show on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Here with you until 5 a.m. Those little Tom Petty sound like live in concert. We'll talk about Tom Petty a little bit throughout the night. As I was telling Patty, we'll reflect on his life through an interview I did with Warren Zanes 2 years ago this November. The book came out, Petty, the Biography, and Warren got to talk to Tom Petty and all of his friends. It was an authorized biography, although Petty laid bare his life and was pretty honest about everything. It was a very fascinating read. You can find the interview, the full interview, at WGNradio.com as well. Good morning, Roger Battish. How are you?
Well, good morning, Pat Bubala. I am doing fine. Yourself?
I can't complain.
Okay. You could, but...
And who would care? As they say.
I care.
I only got about an hour and a half sleep, Rog. I am a little tired.
Oh, not good.
Had a big volleyball tournament.
Ooh.
I coached the St. Catherine of Siena 6th grade girls volleyball team.
Yeah, and how'd we do?
We didn't do that good.
Oh, no.
We've got a good team. We had a rough night.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because normally in volleyball, you play two sets. If you win or lose both, that's it. But if you split, you play a third set.
Oh, okay.
But because it's a tournament and there are, you know, strict time limits to get all the games in.
Right.
In pool play, which is what tonight was, there's only four teams in the tournament. So we played all three teams tonight, but you only played two sets. And you only played to 21 instead of what you would normally play to 25.
Oh.
And so they just, your record was just kind of by your sets. So we went 2-4 in our sets. We didn't do as good as we should have. So we ended up the third seed going into tomorrow, which is not bad because it means we don't have to play the earliest game. We don't play till 8:50 a.m.
that'll get your sleep put in there, I'm telling you.
Which means I didn't get much sleep tonight. I won't be getting much sleep in the morning. It'll be a bit of a drag butt day around for me.
Oh, my God.
But that's okay. So.
All right.
But tomorrow morning, semifinals, you win, you go to the championship game. Ooh. So hopefully we will get it together. I will tell you, Raj, I don't mean to talk out of school too much here, but it's just you and me.
Yeah, it is.
Coaching girls is a lot different than coaching boys.
Really?
Yes.
How so?
Well, and I don't want to be unfair about it because maybe it's just that the boys that I'm coaching in baseball, mm-hmm. it's competitive baseball, and they're all there for that, and so maybe that's just part of it.
Well,
and
it's maybe two different sports.
It's very different sports, and maybe we're just a little more recreational here, and maybe it's that it's school and it's not outside of school. I don't know, but two things have happened.
Mm-hmm.
One, all of the girls on my team from last year suddenly became teenagers, and they're not 13 yet, but they're about 17.
How did they? Oh, one of those.
The attitudes have changed just a little.
Really?
Yes. 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 Yes.
Was
yes.
there a lot of angry, mean looks at the coach?
Oh, it's tough for Anna to go to school these days. Uh-oh. They're talking about the coach a little bit at school.
Yeah.
Coach doesn't let us serve overhand. Coach is mean. Coach is this. Coach is that.
We're going to change the coach.
Well, the coach might end up being changed. The coach is going to have no problems with that. If that's what the administration decides to do, I will support their decision 1,000%.
There you go.
Believe you me. I am the coach because last year no other parent would step up and coach.
We
didn't have a coach last year. I didn't.
You got to have like 100 parents in that school available to be coaching.
Well, not in our grade. There's only one grade per class.
Yeah, but what do you got, 30 kids in the class?
There were 7 girls on the team last year. So there were 7 sets of parents that were eligible to really...
Wait a minute, don't you need 1, 2, 3, 4? Don't you need
6.
9?
You need 6.
Yeah. Okay.
You need 6 on the court.
I remember we had 9 on a side when I was learning volleyball in...
That's a lot of people on the court during volleyball.
Well, we had a big gym.
How big was it? You play on like a basketball court.
Well, yeah. And so we had we had big schools, so we had a lot of kids. So we had to rotate them in and out and in and out, so we always put 9 on a side.
Well, last year I only had 7 on the team. This year I have 13.
Oh, substitution.
So it's a lot of subbing.
Yeah.
It's a lot of trying to find equal playing time. Mm. And so there have been some issues with that. Some girls getting a little upset about playing time, that I'm not allowing them to overhand serve. And frankly, they can't get an overhand to the net. And when I say that, they say, well, you don't let us practice it. And I said, because we're not getting our underhand serves over. You got to get that first.
Now, the other teams that you play, if I may at this time.
Yes, please.
Do any of them overhand serve?
Some do.
Okay.
Some do overhand serve, and some do it pretty well, and it's tough to defend. Yeah. And so learning it is a great idea. But with 13 people on the team and limited time for practice, mm-hmm. I'm not going to waste a bunch of time at practice having them over. You want to overhand serve? Excellent. When you're at home, practice. Get a ball out in the backyard yeah. and start learning to do it. And if you yeah. show me you can do it, hey, we can do it. I'm not against it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm against taking time to try to learn this when we're not even getting the underhand serves over as much as we should.
And when you're together as the team, you have to work on team stuff.
Yes.
Not individual stuff, which would
yeah,
be the overhand serve.
It's very hard right. to like, you know, and we do try sometimes to separate out in practices on drills and get some individual instruction, but there's only so much you can do.
Yeah. Right.
And you only have so many practices. They're only an hour and a half long. Yada,
that's
yada.
That's not a lot of time.
Yeah. So you do what you can. Yeah. So we've had some issues where, and I love these girls. They're mm-hmm. good, strong girls, and they're good, talented players. But, they're at that age, and believe me, nobody lived that age more than I did, where it's fun to like not take it seriously and sometimes say something back.
Ooh.
So tonight we had a rough night in a lot of the time, and so I was having a talk with them afterwards, and I often do this with the boys mm-hmm. in baseball because we get teary or we get upset, and I'll talk about life and how this is where you grow. When times are tough,
mm-hmm.
this is where you learn that you can stand up and rise up above things. I said, you will have very tough times in life. I've been fired from at least 3 jobs in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I've had very bad days in my life. You have to learn that that will happen, and that's okay, and you fight back and you get better.
There you go.
And I started making the comment that, hey, when you have a really bad day in life, when mm-hmm. life is getting you down and terrible, are you going to crawl under the covers and cry? And before I could say or, somebody said, yes. I was not laughing.
That wasn't bad.
It was bad.
It was. I
made them leave the circle. Yep.
Raj,
I'm not putting up with it.
You are a
it's
meanie.
Enough. I'm sorry.
I'm thinking of siding with the girls now.
Well,
you are too tough.
If you're free to coach in the morning, they might like to have you, Raj.
What time?
8:50 a.m.
8:50 a.m.
8:50 a.m.
Tomorrow at 8:50 a.m.
Can you make it out to Cary, Illinois?
I don't think so.
No, okay.
Nah, I'm going to be
well
sound
then,
asleep.
Mr. Coach.
Yeah. I'll be with you in spirit.
You'll be with them in spirit. It sounds like not taking my side on this. So it was, you know, one of those rough moments. I made her leave
yeah.
the circle, and I went and talked to her and said, "Hey," wow. and it's one of my older girls who played last year who I need mm-hmm. to be a leader. You know, we've got tears on the court. We've got this. We've got that. And mm-hmm. that's fine. It's part of growing up. But the talking back to the coach stuff?
No, mm-mm. not good.
Mm-mm.
Not good.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
We even had that in school, in class. Yeah, we would take care of it.
What cracks me up is the boys, Michael and Tommy, get so mad that I am so nice to these girls.
Because it doesn't sound like you're nice
to them. It doesn't
them.
Sound like I'm
no.
nice. And the girls would all tell you I'm not nice at all.
Yeah.
But Michael and Tommy know from baseball what really not nice is like.
Because
there's some times when they're all really screwing it up
mm-hmm.
that we come out and we have a little meeting on the mound. A salty word or two comes out. And
are you a sailor?
And the law gets laid down a little bit.
Yeah.
And they're very upset with me that I don't kind of yell at these girls at all like I do in baseball. And quite frankly, it just seems like.
Well, you have to yell in baseball because when you're in the dugout, you're farther
no.
away from the players.
No, no,
you
no,
have
no.
to yell so you, they
well,
can hear you.
No, my yelling is quiet so nobody can hear the words that are being said except for the people in the circle. Oftentimes, there will be a meeting on the mound where I'll say, now, boys, the words I use here are never repeated in front of your parents. And that's how I'll start out. I know, maybe it's not good, whatever, but I don't do that because with volleyball because, well, it's a Catholic school and they get kind of upset if I was doing that. And
yeah,
plus, I don't
you
think
see the fires of damnation flying up around you.
I'd get the ruler
yeah.
really quick. They'd come
ooh,
right out and smack
you'd
my
get
knuckles.
The yardstick.
I would
they can
get
hit
the
you before
stick.
They get close to you.
I know. They're good with that stuff. So, yeah, so we had a rough night at volleyball, but
oh,
we're
gosh.
Back at it in the morning. And, Roger, I'm telling you, they can win this tournament.
They can
win this tournament.
I believe in them. All right,
will
down,
they
now.
Believe in themselves? That's the question.
They will. The season just started, didn't it? couple weeks?
About a month into it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
This is the first tournament we played. I think the only tournament we have until our conference tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But they can be really good. All of the players can be really good.
Excellent.
But they all have their moments, you know. They'll... And they don't pick each other. That's what frustrates me, is they're not picking each other up. They're not picking each other up when things go wrong. And that's the lesson.
They will get it. When you least expect it, they will get it.
We shall see, Mr. Badish. We shall see.
I have confidence.
So I hope you're right. All right. Just tell me, we got to take a quick break. We do have a lot to do tonight. Coming up in the second half of this hour, we'll start a conversation about gun laws in the United States, about the Second Amendment. We've got a libertarian who's somebody who's on the side of don't rush to change all these laws just because this happened. We'll talk about why he says that, because I'm of the mind to say, why the hell aren't we changing these gun laws? Why are we letting this happen? More to come, 720 WGN.
She's a good girl, loves her mama, loves Jesus, in America too. She's a good girl, is crazy about Elvis, loves horses, and her boyfriend too.
Matt Bobala with you, 720 WGN. Of course, Tom Petty passed away this week at the age of 66. Which is, in the rock and roll world, very terribly sad news. He just finished a big tour, had three nights at the Hollywood Bowl that finished up just a few days before he passed. He was at Wrigley Field over the summer, and I didn't go see him, and I'm kicking myself about it. I did get to see Tom Petty in concert once at the United Center, I think 5 to 10 years ago, but didn't have great seats. Always wanted to get back to see him again. Very bummed that I didn't, although our good friend Rob, a couple friend of ours, Rob and Rachel, Rob went this summer. Rob is a huge Tom Petty fan. That's who we went with 10 years ago or whenever it was at the United Center. And he did go to Wrigley this summer, and he was right down by the stage. So I'm very glad he got to see him one last time. But very sad about it. We'll get to the gun control talk in a little bit. But somebody writes, Matt, you boob. Chicago has the toughest gun control laws in the nation. Look at Chicago. And I think that's pretty much been debunked, that our gun laws aren't that tough,
mm-hmm.
A. And B, there's a lot of stories that all these guns are coming in from Indiana, Michigan, mm-hmm. Wisconsin, stuff like that. But those aren't the guns I'm talking about, and that's a different issue. But people like to push that narrative right away. As soon as we try to talk about semi-automatic guns, the bump stocks and all these things, people say, oh, look at Chicago, look at this, look at that. And that changes what the conversation is. So we'll get to that in just a minute or two. We're also going to talk a little bit later on about Cam Newton's apology, which finally came out. You heard about what Cam Newton did this week.
Yeah.
Where he laughed when a reporter, a female reporter, asked him a question about the routes one of his receivers is running.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of smirks and says, yeah, it's just funny to hear a female asking about routes. And later said, oh, I should have said a journalist because you guys don't know anything. He didn't apologize to the reporter. She was ticked and she stood her ground, and good for her.
Yeah.
And then after he lost sponsorship, he came out with an apology.
Why does it always take that?
I don't know.
Seriously.
Because money talks, and that's...
Yeah, but
because I will say this, because I'm annoyed that that's what happened. However, when you say something that you don't think's a big deal, and then everybody gets all in a huff about it, you think, oh, Jesus, God, people, you just chill out and relax. What's the big deal? And then somebody pulls their money from you and you go, that's kind of a big deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it should be way before that. It should be before you open your mouth. I have learned the hard way over the years to not open your mouth before you've engaged your brain.
But how did you learn that, Raj? What'd you say?
By screwing up too many times. I learned the hard way.
And that's what Cam Newton did.
But I'm not Cam Newton. I don't have sponsors.
That doesn't... Yeah, you know what, though? See, you know, it's funny. It's just like a friend of mine will say about a celebrity or somebody famous or somebody rich who gets busted for drugs or busted mm-hmm. with a prostitute or whatever. Like, he's always like, I can't believe when you've got that much money or you're that famous, why would you blah, blah, blah.
But they're still human beings.
Exactly. Yeah. Well... And that's Cam
Newton. And humans make mistakes.
He's a human being who made a mistake.
But.
And even though he's got sponsors, because he's a really great football player. And that doesn't mean he's, been around enough to know enough.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying.
A certain way.
I think he is old enough. I think he has been through enough to, yeah, I mean, do you know that when athletes at his caliber go through high school and go through college and approach the pros, that they have counselors? The NFL supplies counselors to help them deal with having a ton of money,
if we sat and talked
the media.
About the NFL's counselors have to be the biggest failures in the world. If you look at the list of problems the NFL players seem to have, whether it's very small potatoes, things like this, whether it's domestic abuse, whatever. Yeah. I mean, they need more counseling. The counselors need counseling, would be my guess. All right.
Sorry.
Well, let's stay with Cam Newton. Just right after the news, we'll go ahead and play that audio as soon as we get back from Rodgers' headlines from the news. Real quick, I went and saw this week, Rodgers. So Pearl Jam was here last summer.
Okay.
And played at Wrigley Field.
Right.
Eddie Vedder, the lead singer of Pearl Jam, big time, long time Cubs fan, grew up here in Chicago. They have a concert film that came out this week. It was in Chicago. It was only playing up at the ArcLight at the Lincoln Square. And I think, at New City in Lincoln Park, I think is where it is. And my buddy and I went and saw it on Monday because we had gone to one of the concerts.
Okay.
And so I wanted to see it on the big screen. It's a 2-hour concert film. It's mostly their, mostly their music, but it's also a big love letter to Cubs fans because Eddie Vedder grew up a Cubs fan. They have video of him back in 1992. Pearl Jam was playing the Metro, which is just a block away from Wrigley.
Right.
They have some old footage of like a buddy or a bandmate videotaping Eddie walking around probably the day of the concert, early in the day. It's off season. It's chilly outside, but he's walking around Wrigley, pointing out where he used to sit, pointing out Murphy's bleachers, talking about all this stuff. And so they show a lot of old video. You see Ron Santo and Jose Cardinal and the run from last season because Eddie was at the games with Theo. He was sitting with Theo and his wife and child when they won the World Series. So it's as a Cubs fan, it's cool to see. As a Pearl Jam fan, it's awesome to see.
Wow.
It was only did a limited run in theaters, but FS1, Fox Sports 1, I guess, is showing some of the playoff games on October 13th, so next week. I think it's after an American League game. They're going to show the film for free on FS1. So if you're watching baseball next week and you want to check it out and didn't get a chance to go to the theater, you can see it for free next week, and then they're, you know, going to sell it or whatever you can buy.
I'm sure it'll probably end up being on one of the channels.
Eventually,
the digital channels.
It certainly shall be. I'm quite sure, Roger Badish. Okay, 2:30 in the morning. We'll talk real quick about Cam Newton after we get a check of the headlines. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for being with us. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on the Magnificent Mile in the Tribune Tower. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking with, what's his name? Nick Gillespie from Reason.com. He's also the co-author of a book called, it's not on this page. It's The Declaration of Independence. A libertarian politics can cure what's wrong with America, something along those lines. We'll chat with him about the Second Amendment and why he says we should not rush to make a bunch of changes. But first, let's talk real quick. We mentioned Cam Newton. He was at a press conference earlier this week. A woman named Jordan, who I believe, I forget her last name, works for the Charlotte Observer, I believe, has been covering the Panthers for, I don't know, a while, the Carolina Panthers, for a couple of years now. And she's asking him a question about the routes that his receivers are taking. And he kind of smirks and sits back. It's just funny to hear a female asking about routes. And she was not happy about that. Talked to him afterwards. And he said, listen, maybe I should have said journalists. If you know about routes, you know about more than anybody else in there because you guys don't know routes. And he just dismissed it. He didn't apologize. And so she was upset. The NFL was upset. Dannon pulled the sponsorship that he has with them. And then after that, Cam Newton released this apology.
After careful thought, I understand that my word choice was extremely degrading and disrespectful to women. And to be honest, that was not my intentions. And if you are a person who took offense to what I said, I sincerely apologize to you. I'm a man who tries to be a positive role model in my community and tries to use my platform to inspire others. And I own I take ownership to everything that comes with that. And what I did was extremely unacceptable. I'm a father to two beautiful daughters. And at their age, I try to instill in them that they can do and be anything that they want to be. And the fact that during this whole process, I've already lost sponsors and countless fans, I realized that the joke is really on me. And I've learned a valuable lesson from this. And to the young people who see this, I hope that you learn something from this as well. Don't be like me. Be better than me. And to the reporters, to the journalists, to the moms, super moms, to the daughters, the sisters, and the women all around the world, I sincerely apologize and hope that you can find the kindness in your heart to forgive me. Thank you.
So that was a pretty good apology. He does mention, you know, I've lost sponsors and countless of fans in that order. And that's interesting. It sounded like a very sincere apology, and, you know, mentioning he's got daughters and he wants them to grow up to believe they can be anything they want to be. And I felt that the apology got better as it went on, because at first it started with if anyone was offended by. And I always hate when people say if anyone was offended by, because if you're acknowledging it's offensive, then take ownership of that. Yeah. I said some offensive things and I'm sorry for that. You should be offended by what I said. That would be more, that would feel better to me than if anyone was offended by. But at the end, he got stronger with it. And I don't know. I mean, he lost sponsorship. He's going to learn a lesson. And I think that for the most part, people will be pretty forgiving of that. But like you said, Roger, you wish he knew better, but now he knows. And I think a lot of us have to go through tough times in life where we make a comment that was just a comment type of comment we would always make and didn't really think about until somebody taught us, hey, words have meaning, and that one was bad.
But would those comments be ones that he would normally make? I think that from your description, I didn't see the event.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about it after the hubbub. But from your description, I'm getting the sense that, and this is not Cam Newton's thing, this is in sports. There comes a time when, and it even happens in news, I admit it, there comes a time when certain questions are asked by the news media, by the sports media, that somebody on the other side, somebody being asked those questions, sits there and goes, seriously? It happens all the time. And I'm thinking he found himself in that situation. Now, his choice of words, his attitude about it, this was after a game, wasn't it?
No, it was during practice.
During practice.
I think it was one of his, you know, weekday availabilities. Right. I don't think it was out of frustration. And it certainly wasn't a, God, everybody, you're really going to ask me the same old question again. It wasn't one of those exasperation things. She's asking a specific question about the way one of the receivers is running his routes. And I heard the whole thing before. I can't remember now. But, mm-hmm. you know, whether that's helping or hurting or whatever. It's a really good football question that a lot of other reporters in the room are. And, you know, another reporter from the Charlotte Observer, a male, wrote a lengthy piece about, listen, here's how much Jordan knows about football. She can describe a route tree to me. And he's like, I've been covering the team for 25 years. I can't tell you what the hell a route tree is. And mm-hmm. he's like, she loved football in high school. She started studying in college. And after reporting for however many years out of college, we snapped her up because she's good. And she's been covering the team for 3 years and she knows her stuff. And so it wasn't one of those where somebody's asking some innocuous, dumb question. You're like, man, mm-hmm. I can't sit here and answer this crap all day. It's a really good football question that I think he was caught off guard by. And I think it was kind of like he's probably never had a woman in his life who could really maybe, you know, listen, I couldn't talk football with Cam Newton. And maybe he's never been around a woman who's really, really knows the game and can really talk about it mm-hmm. in such an intricate way. And he was just kind of like blown away by it and just kind of like laughing like, man, it's funny to hear it could have turned into a, wow, I can't believe I'm getting that, you know, kind of a question.
Right.
But it didn't sound that way, and it didn't come out that way. And he just kind of laughed and said female, and it sounded derogatory. Mm. And, you know, that's how it was. But I don't know what was in his heart at the time, but it wasn't the 10th question after a tough loss, and I just can't put up with this anymore.
Gotcha. All right.
It is what it is. But yeah, he made the apology. At least give him credit for doing that. So yeah. Coming up next, we're going to get into the whole Second Amendment. So fasten your seatbelts. The Matthew Wallace Show on 720 WGN. Of course, we're talking a lot about guns and gun control tonight in the wake of what happened in Las Vegas. A lot of people calling for changes this week. And a lot of people saying, wait a minute, don't call for changes right away. Let's really figure out what happened. Now, I tend to believe that a lot of times when this is not the time. This is the time for reflection and thoughts and prayers. I feel like that's pushing things off until they don't seem as bad anymore, and then nothing truly gets done. But maybe that's not the case. Joining us on the phone right now is Nick Gillespie, the editor-in-chief of Reason.com, the co-author of The Declaration of Independence, How Libertarian Politics Can Fix What's Wrong with America. Nick, thank you very much for jumping on the phone with us.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote a hit-and-run blog at Reason.com. The headline was, "This is the time to defend the Second Amendment and less strict gun control." Explain to me why this is not the time to talk about stricter gun control measures.
For a couple of reasons. One, if you go back over about the past 20, 25 years in America, what we have witnessed was largely at the state level and then eventually at the federal level, you had expanded ability for people to own more types of gun and to carry them wherever they want, whether concealed carry or open carry or anything like that. At the same time that we had more guns being sold and carried more freely and more guns in circulation, there's been a precipitous decline in violent crime across America, and particularly in gun-related crime. So the fact of the matter is, you know, we have mass shootings, which are horrible, which are also notoriously difficult to predict and control against. But the large story, and I think it's the essential background for any discussion of gun control policy, is that over the past 20, 25 years, we've seen expanded gun rights and a decline in violent crime and gun-related crime. So, you know, the fact of the matter is that we've had relaxed gun control over the past quarter century and a precipitous decline in violent crime. The other part of it is that when most people start talking in the wake of Vegas, and this happened quite a bit, you started to hear a lot of things that would have done nothing to change the outcome of that event. You know, people would say, oh, we need to get rid of the so-called gun show loophole, where everybody has to go through a background check. In fact, the shooter passed background checks. All of the guns, as far as we know now, were legally purchased. A lot of the things that people think will do something won't actually have any effect on this type of event. So it's, I think we need to keep that into perspective.
So, Nick, I understand that, and you're absolutely right. I feel, too, that a lot of what's being talked about, better checks against mental health, more waiting periods, things like that, are all things he could have gotten around and still would have had all of these weapons. To me, it's the type of weapons he was able to buy. And I know we're talking, and the NRA has even come out saying they're, willing to look at these bump stocks and whether or not they should be available to help these guns fire even faster. But say he didn't have the bump stock, I don't know how we categorize the rifles he had. And I know we're still finding out a lot of information about everything he had, but they are high power, high caliber, very intense weaponry that he was able to acquire legally. What's your thoughts on restrictions, I guess, to the Second Amendment? We have the right to free speech, but I can't walk into a crowded theater and yell fire. That's considered mm-hmm. illegal.
Unless there's a fire.
This is a fire,
on.
Right? So, absolutely.
It's important because both the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, and you can throw in the other eight as well in the Bill of Rights, are, you know, there's some level on which they're limited, but it varies. So, you know, in the First Amendment, you know, Congress is not supposed to make any laws regarding the establishment of religion, curtailing freedom of assembly or the practice of free speech and free expression. The Second Amendment, you're absolutely right. It does talk about a well-regulated militia. There are limits that are implicit in the language that have been recognized by the court. So, for instance, one of the reasons why you may not have a right to, carry a bazooka or drive a tank around is because those are not weapons that have something to do with personal defense, or that a regular member of a militia or kind of National Guard unit would have on them. So, and the Supreme Court has already ruled, I mean, going back to the mid-80s, they have limited the ability of people to own and have fully automatic weapons, what are typically called machine guns. Going back to the 30s and 40s, machine guns were subject to stricter regulation than, you know, regular guns. What it seems to be, so there is no question that there are limits to the Second Amendment that may not be exactly the same when we're talking about the First Amendment. Although even in there, you know, it's like the freedom of religion doesn't mean, that you have freedom of plural marriage in America. It means that you don't have the right to cannibalism, et cetera. I mean, so there are limits on all of these laws, and we should respect that. And I would not be surprised if the bump stock, which is kind of an attachment that you can put on a gun that will help make a semi-automatic weapon, which means that you have to pull the trigger once to fire each bullet. You turn it into something approaching a fully automatic weapon where you can just squeeze the trigger and it'll spray out as many bullets as you're kind of carrying at the time. Would the guns, that the shooter seemed to be using, were semi-automatic weapons. A lot of them are, they're rarely used for violent crime. So it's not clear that getting rid of them would have changed things very much. One of the things with something like a bump stock, and this sounds gruesome to be making these kinds of calculations, but it does allow people to shoot faster, but it allows them, it also makes them shoot less, in a focused way. It's possible he would have killed more people had he taken slightly slower time, but was actually aiming in a more kind of traditional or conventional fashion. I think the biggest thing to realize is that, you know, most of the guns that are out there and most of the guns that are used in homicides are not even semi-automatic weapons. They're handguns or they're regular rifles and shotguns and things like that. And that, to be quite honest, I don't think the type of weapon here is really that, is really what's at play. Mass shootings are extremely rare events. We hear about them a lot, and one of the reasons we do is because they're so rare. But where it's extremely rare for a mass shooting episode, which means it's got four or more victims, including the shooter, in it, the person who starts shooting. If you get rid of mass shooting events where the people involved don't know each other, they trickle down from a couple of hundred or several hundred a year to a couple of dozen, if even. And it's extremely rare, because what we're talking about when we talk about mass shootings typically are gang incidents or criminal activities where both sides are known to each other. Again, my point here isn't to minimize the suffering and the carnage in Vegas, but there are very few things that can be done that would have prevented that from happening. And the things that would have are not about gun control as much as they are if people in Las Vegas want to subject themselves to, or in other places, every time you go to a hotel, do you want to be searched to see what's in your luggage? What are you carrying? Things like that. We can do stuff like that, but it's not strictly gun control, and it will be immensely invasive for very little benefit, actually.
Okay, but I think that we're minimizing. So, okay, most of the gun violence in America is not in the mass shooting. But to say this happens so rarely, when you can name Las Vegas and Orlando and go all the way back to Newtown and all of these mass shootings that have happened, that is a lot of mass shootings compared to other countries, is it not?
It's absolutely America, going back to the colonial period, has always been a far more violent and gun-heavy culture than other countries. I think the real question in terms of things like mass shootings is, over the past 20, 30, 40 years, are mass shootings increasing or going down? And there, Sometimes the definitions change and whatnot, but essentially there does not seem to be a clear uptick trend in the number of mass shootings. There is evidence to suggest that they are more deadly, which is worrying, and there's no question that's an issue. But even still, you know, there's about 12,000 gun homicides a year, and you know, then there's about 20,000 suicides, which is, I think most people would agree, is a separate issue. Suicides by gun, which may have something to do with gun control or who we allow to have legally obtained guns. But of those 12,000 gun homicides, the percentage that come from mass shootings is extremely tiny. It's a fraction of 1%. And again, I don't want to say, you know, that doesn't mean anything. The people who are killed, to them and their families, this is a tragedy which is incalculable and life-shattering. But you cannot make policy for the 40% of American households that have guns based on something like that. I mean, it doesn't make sense to either punish or limit people because of a group of people that no clear law would stop anyway. I mean, what is the best way of stopping a shooter like in Vegas or even Omar Mateen, who shot up the Orlando nightclub a year ago?
Well, I would think it would be
to
not have that type of weapon available to the public. If the Second Amendment says we have a right to bear arms and we acknowledge that there are limits to those rights, why isn't it limited? And you're right. If you're just going to bring up all the handgun deaths and everything else, then it's going to look like small potatoes. But for this instance, if the semi-automatic weaponry is not available, is illegal, can't be bought legally at gun shows or through gun shops, if all these guns he bought legally, he wasn't shooting with handguns. He wasn't shooting with a rifle that most people hunt for deer with. He wasn't shooting with a gun that you would traditionally protect your home with or protect your person without in public. Let's pick it up right there after the news. Nick Gillespie with us here on 720 WGN. Nick Gillespie from Reason.com will be with us again after the news. Nick is frustrating me because he says things like, well, it's possible that without the bump stock, he actually would have, you know, took better aim and killed more people. Says, changes the narrative to talking about how most people are killed by handguns, not automatic or semi-automatic rifles. These aren't the type of guns that kill most people in America. That mass shootings are extremely rare events. So if we just keep saying it's not this, it's not this, it's not that, then we go back to let's just not do anything at all. Let's protect at all costs our right to own any damn thing we want, even if it can cause mass harm. Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. Nick Gillespie from Reason.com is with us talking about the Second Amendment, talking about the guns that are available right now. We have a whole category of guns that aren't technically assault rifles because they're not fully automatic that are legal.
Well, and assault rifles are, assault rifles in America were never fully automatic. I mean, when Congress started talking about assault guns or assault weapons in the 90s and passed a ban that it was in place for a decade and that had no appreciable effect on gun violence. Most investigations of that came out. What I'm saying is, like, I understand what you're saying, and I say this as somebody who I'm a supporter of a robust Second Amendment. I do not particularly care for guns myself. I don't like shooting. I don't carry guns. I don't own guns. Having said all of that, there's over 300 million guns in circulation. How do you go about and these are questions because, you know, how do you get if you think that semi-automatic weapons are more likely to be used in mass shootings, which I guess I suspect that they are. I don't actually know. How do you get them out of circulation? Because then that presents another problem. And what I'm saying is that there are a lot of constitutional issues here. There are also a lot of pragmatic issues. And I think when you start looking at those obstacles and then you look at that larger trend line, that is more, the fact that gun violence is decreasing and that gun violence has declined over the years where guns have become more widespread and more circulated in America, I think we need to take a deep breath and then start thinking about, What are the safety protocols for certain types of places where gun violence might erupt? And that would might include movie theaters like the Aurora, Colorado shooting. It might include nightclubs like the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, or open-air venues in urban areas such as we saw in Las Vegas. But I don't know that there is any kind of gun control legislation or gun control policy that is either constitutionally sound, practical, or politically viable that is going to have much of an effect on mass shootings.
But Nick, are you then advocating that we do more to – so doesn't that seem crazy that we're so ready to protect the Second Amendment at all costs, even for guns that could do violence in huge crowds, that we would rather look that it makes more sense to you, are you saying, to look at how do we protect people at Lollapalooza? Maybe we don't have outdoor venues. Maybe we have screening at theaters. Every hotel would have to have. I mean, all of that.
I'm not. I'm saying, but what, you know, because in fact, doing security checks at a venue is probably, it would likely be more, conceivably would be more effective than trying to go, house to house to confiscate weapons.
Sure, but if they did a heavy safety check at this Harvest Festival, and I don't know that they didn't. Mm-hmm. If I go to Wrigley Field or Soldier Field for a Bears game here in Chicago, I get a pat down and I go through a metal detector.
Right.
That would have done absolutely nothing to protect those people.
Yeah, right? I agree. So, well, and you know, this is like, and I'm not being glib or flippant here, but there are limits to what we can do to prevent violence.
But that's what we're saying. We're saying we're going to 59 people died and 400 some were hit. And we're going to say, you know what? There's a limit to what we can do, instead of saying we have to relook at this. And should these weapons be available? It's amazing to me that we're at a point in our country where we're going to shrug our shoulders and go, well, there's only so much we can do if we're going to have outdoor festivals near hotels.
Well, I agree, and I'm not like Pollyanna-ish about this, but I'm saying, like, you know, we recognize that there are limits to what we can do in all sorts of areas of human activity. And so when you're talking about speed limits and stuff like that, if the national speed limits were reduced, we would reduce the number of vehicular deaths every year.
And we've reduced the numbers by far and wide in the last 30 years through all sorts of different measures that we've put in place, haven't we?
But this is the murder rate. I mean, like, this is, if you're talking about that, the murder rate over the past 25 years has been more than halved in America. And so, you know, we're in, it's a similar, you know, downward trajectory. And I think that we have to recognize that. And when you look at a city, I mean, again, like, I think, you know, mass shootings are horrific because there are, you know, there are clear victims and clear perpetrators. The violence, you know, the gun violence that is racking Chicago as a city is not mass shootings. It,
right.
it is, you know, criminal activity that is related, you know, that ends up, giving rise to gun battles and things like that. And all of the gun control laws in the world and all of trying to get, law-abiding people to follow stricter and stricter rules has not worked in Chicago. And I don't think it's going to work more broadly. And again, totally understand. There's like a terror and a horror when you think about mass shootings. I mean, you know, when you think of the Sandy Hook in elementary school, for God's sake.
Yeah.
When you start to say we are going to radically alter every aspect of American life, not just about guns, but then it means that people have to be willing to open up their homes and be subjected to all sorts of protocols where the police or law enforcement come in and check.
Wait a minute. Why are we jumping to that?
I don't think it's.
Why does it jump to? Why are you relating to, if we're going to subject America to all these things, why is regulating guns and especially rifles that are semi-automatic or assault-type rifles, why is that equated to, and then Americans have to open up their homes? What are we talking about?
There are 300 million, somewhere between 300 and 350 million is usually the range of estimates of guns that are in circulation in America. If what you're talking about is ridding the country of a certain class of weapon, a semi-automatic rifle, and something like an AR-15, depending on the version, it could be semi-automatic, is the most popular rifle that's basically in circulation. How are you going to pull them out of circulation? And then, I mean, this is what I'm saying, like, because if you simply say well, we're going to stop, you know, we're going to stop producing them or allowing them to be sold legally. That won't stop the guns that are in circulation, and there are massive numbers of guns in circulation. And it also, like, it assumes that merely by prohibiting something, you'll actually stop the sale of it. If people want semi-automatic weapons, and particularly criminals, they're going to find ways to get them, and they'll smuggle them in.
Well, we assume that they will. We don't know 100% sure for sure that they will. We make it more difficult for them to do so. As we've read, Stephen Paddock bought all these guns legally, so we would have given him more obstacles, maybe a way for people to have a heads up that, hey, this guy's looking for a bunch of weapons. Maybe somebody says something to somebody because it becomes something more. Now, you could say, well, you're dealing with a criminal element. They're not going to do that. But if mostly law-abiding citizens own these guns now, I'm not saying we have to strip them out of everybody's home or go open all the houses to search and seizure, but let's not allow them to be produced and sold legally. Let's not allow them to be sold at gun shows or at gun shops or anywhere legally. And then start from there. Shouldn't we at least make it more difficult for people to acquire them?
Yeah, I disagree with you because I think that you are underestimating the logistics involved in that kind of shift. First, that it is not so easy to turn off. You know, there isn't a switch that we can flip to say, okay, we're going to get rid of guns that we think are more problematic than other guns. So that's first. And then secondly, the efficacy of that change, I mean, you're looking at just the benefits of it, which arguably would be, in the way that you're talking about it, would be that Paddock would not have been able to use a gun like that to kill 59 people or 58 people. There are also costs to that, and there are costs not simply in, you know, costs taken from people who use these guns for target shooting, but there are also costs to the criminal justice, to privacy, to surveillance, to various other freedoms. And again, I'm not, you know, this is where I think we need to have an honest discussion about the limits of public policy. Policy cannot always fix all of the problems in the world. Good policy is based on, you know, widely shared empirical observations and positive outcomes. And we have, and this is what I would argue, is that we actually have been doing this for the past quarter century, where we have liberalized gun control. We have made it easier for more people to own guns and carry them under more circumstances. And we have seen a decline, a massive decline in violent crime and gun-related crime, so that the general policy is sound.
But you cannot tell me, I doubt you have data that shows that the availability of semi-automatic type weapons has led to any decrease in crime or any decrease in violent crime or gun. If these were never available, do you think any of that data would have changed?
I mean, all we know for sure, because part of it is that there are theories that the more armed a society is in certain circumstances, that crime decreases, partly because criminals who also follow, you know, kind of basic human incentives, if they're not sure if somebody is armed or not, they're less likely to attack them because it raises the cost of committing a crime, the potential cost. But the one thing that we do know for sure, because you can't prove a counterfactual, but the one thing that we do know for sure is that, you know, there are more guns in circulation. It is easier to buy and carry guns than ever before. And violent crime and gun-related crime are at historic lows. They are, you know, gun homicides, gun crime is below where it was in 1960, according to most statisticians. There are only authoritative national crime statistics from the early 70s on. But so, you know, something is working here. Well, and again, that doesn't mean, you know, there are real questions about, say, in the Sandy Hook shooting, what do you do in a situation? How should schools be taught to either respond to these kinds of situations or, you know, should there be somebody armed? I don't know. But, you know, what can you do? You know, in that case, a mass shooting, a deranged gunman, who had mental problems, who would not have been able to own guns legally, but he broke into his mother's gun safe where they were stored. He killed his mother. I mean, there are, you know, can we prevent every crime, no matter how horrific? And I don't know that we can. And then the question becomes, how far do you go in doing that, where it really would reorder huge amounts of American society beyond what we're talking about here, just with the right to own and bear arms?
But if His mom doesn't legally purchase those guns because they're not available. His mom doesn't seem like the type who's going to go underground and buy illegal guns. Maybe she would. Who knows? We don't know. You're right. We can't prove that. But it maybe limits his ability to do what he did. And I'm sorry, Nick, but you keep saying, but we don't know, and how do we know? And it's just such a anti-American thing, it seems like, for us to say, well, we don't know if it's going to – we're so glued to the Second Amendment. And I'm sorry, you keep bringing up – one more thing, Nick. You keep bringing up that gun violence is down and all these statistics that show all of this. And can you really correlate that to the freedom of gun ownership? Or could a lot of people – I imagine the other side, I had a mom, would argue that people are more educated. And it's changed in cities where violent gun crimes were happening, and there are probably other things that other people would argue also helped with those statistics.
I agree. That's why I said correlate. I can correlate it. I can't prove causation necessarily. And that's meaningful. I'm not trying to overinterpret the data, but what I'm saying is that everybody, when gun laws were being liberalized, mostly at the state level, everybody 25 years ago said, this is going to lead to an epidemic of gun crime and homicides, and there'll be shootouts in the streets. That objectively has not happened. And in fact, it has not just not happened, but gun violence has declined. When you look at all of the Department of Justice statistics, when you look at FBI, when you look at the statistics that people use to chart this. So there is definitely a correlation. Again, I'm not saying that, like mass shootings, they are a tragedy and we have to try to figure out ways to minimize them and to stop them before they occur. But all of the situations that are put out there, all of the policies, rarely would have anything to do with that. And they definitely would not have stopped the Las Vegas shooter, at least as far as the information we know coming out so far. So it's, I'm not even making a Second Amendment argument here that the Constitution is somehow kind of biblical scripture and we can't mess with the Word of God. What I'm saying is that legally it is a constitutional right, so it's harder to kind of toss aside. But more importantly, I don't know that logistically or pragmatically that most of the policies, virtually all of the policies that I've heard discussed, would actually stop stuff, because it's all predicated upon this idea that we can simply will away or wish away all of these weapons that are in circulation and cut off the supply. And again, the gun violence, like where gun homicides are, they're not happening in mass shooting areas. They're happening in smaller things. And they're, and when you look at the places that are seeing rises in gun violence, such as Chicago, they don't fit this pattern of like what we really have to do is make sure that law-abiding people don't have guns. That's not the issue.
And I don't.
And we're not going to be able to get at that through gun control.
And here's the problem I see is that one side takes, everything you just said makes complete sense. But I'm not talking about let's take away everybody's guns. And you're right. If we banned handguns, there'd still be a lot of violence in Chicago because they're not being bought legally anyways, or maybe they're originally being bought legally, but then they're getting into the hands of criminals through criminal activity, right? So that would continue to happen. There's hundreds of millions of guns. They'll still get the guns. That is only going to change through a myriad of other things happening, right? But if we're talking – but it's such a all or nothing, well, we can't control this, we can't do this. I know we can't say for sure we could have prevented Las Vegas. But if those guns were not legal to buy, if those guns were not readily available, he at least would have had a much more difficult time, we could assume, pulling this off. And maybe that would have prevented it. Maybe it wouldn't have. But instead, it seems like we're saying, hey, we can't infringe upon all these rights of the Second Amendment just to stop this type of thing from happening. I think there needs to be a deeper discussion. I think the NRA is so afraid of any regulation means they're coming for your guns, when that's not necessarily the case. I don't think Barack Obama made a real good effort to come after anybody's guns in those eight years that everybody threatened that he's coming for your guns. And it's such a all or none thing, instead of us trying to take reasonable, why is this available to the public? Why should this be available? Without thinking, okay, well, if they do that, then they're going to come for our handguns, and law-abiding people should be able to own a handgun to protect themselves or their home, or a rifle to protect their home or to hunt recreationally. I don't know how you categorize these weapons he had as either of those.
Yeah, but it's also, again, there are lots of things that we own that are potentially destructive, and the government doesn't necessarily say you can't have something because it could be used dangerously. What if, you know, people like target shooting, and if they're law-abiding, you know, there's nothing wrong with them having a, you know, a particular gun. I agree with you about a couple of things that are, that might be worth kind of hitting on. One is, you know, things like the bump stock. It seems likely that they will be banned. You know, that they'll come under you know, some kind of auspice where you know, there's legislation pushed against them. Nobody really knows how many of those are in circulation, or how easy they are to make or to jerry-rig in a way that you know, it might not matter. You know, and I suspect that the NRA will even go along that. And the NRA is odious in this debate for a lot of different reasons. They stoke fears about that Barack Obama was coming after your guns. They, you know, they inflame passions among their members in ways that were not congruent with the actions that Barack Obama actually took. I mean, in his first term, I think the only thing he did about guns was actually to relax laws about making it easier to bring guns onto like Amtrak and to national parks. He was not particularly, you know, going after the Second Amendment. And beyond that, the NRA, in the wake of this, of the Vegas shooting, started talking about, oh, we need more mental health training, you know, spotting mental health people or, you know, mentally unstable people from getting guns, and that violent Hollywood movies had something to do with this. And that's just malarkey. I mean, that kind of causation and correlation even has been disproven time and time again. I do think, you know, one of the problems, and for me this week in thinking about, you know, I'm a libertarian, a small libertarian, so I'm in favor of gun rights and abortion rights. And I know, you know, I get nervous when people start to say, you know, we want to restrict your rights in this area in order to make people more safe. And you see that after Vegas. And then the Republican Congress just passed laws saying that, you know, we're going to ban abortions after 20 weeks. And in a way, like, I don't have a problem with that because virtually no abortions happen after that, after that period. But then you know that that's the starting point. That's not the end of the discussion. And I think part of the problem with polarized politics that we have in the country now is that nobody trusts anybody. Everybody knows everything is strategic, everything is political, and that, you know, as a result, it's very hard to have wide open discussions about what are the things that led to, say, the Vegas mass shooting, and then how might we, in a consensus way, in a way where we can, like 80% of us can agree this would be a better outcome. This is how we get there. It's very hard to have those conversations, and certainly gun rights, you know, have got, along with abortion and, you know, maybe immigration and a couple of other things, are among the most polarizing topics. And we need a different type of political discourse if we're actually going to come to any kind of solution, I think, that people actually can get behind and live with. And that might also be effective.
Well, Nick, it's interesting because I didn't want to bring it up here, but I've been bringing up to friends a couple times this week that I believe that the gun control debate is a lot like abortion. On abortion, you have a side that wants to ban abortion altogether and a side that wants the freedom of choice for women. And the side that wants to ban abortion completely also tends to be anti-birth control, anti-all of these things that would help greatly mitigate the incidences of abortion. And it's this all-or-nothing mentality we have, and you're right. Nobody trusts each other. If you come for these guns, you're going to come for the rest of our guns. If you allow this, you're allowing everything. If you don't allow this, you're not going to allow everything. And you're right. An open and honest discussion is very difficult in America these days. Nick Gillespie is the editor-in-chief at Reason.com. He's the co-author of The Declaration of Independence, How Libertarian Politics Can Fix What's Wrong with America. Nick, I hope there's something out there that can fix what's wrong with America. We'd have a lot to talk about, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard to admit it, especially after a week like this with the Vegas shooting on last Sunday night. But it's, you know, in many ways, America is getting better. I mean, crime is much lower than it was 30 years ago. There have been some slight upticks, but not statistically significant. You know, that's a way that we're getting better. We're more tolerant. I think we're less racist. We're less homophobic. I mean, there are many, many ways where things are going well, but there's no question that the intense polarization between the two major parties who represent fewer and fewer people in America are making it extremely difficult for us to, you know, to talk about things that matter and to really kind of build, you know, a true consensus that, you know, that would make things even better or like, you know, allow us to move forward in areas where we're kind of stuck.
And the immediacy, I think, too, Nick, of things that happen. So you talk about these statistics that, you know, things are getting better in America, and you name all these different things. But if you talk to anybody just on the street, what's racism like in America? It's terrible right now. Yep. It is terrible right now, historically speaking, a million times better than it was. Same thing for gay rights and all sorts of things. But
and police brutality, which, you know, we've been having a national conversation about that since Ferguson. Most people would agree that police are actually probably better than they've ever been, partly because they have to be, because everybody has a cell phone and everybody, you know, it's easier to speak back to power. But it's not good enough. You know, as long as, you know, and that's why I'm saying it's, you know, it's not like, well, we're 10% less racist than we were in 1990, so shut up already.
Right.
I'm not saying that. But, you know, if we need to, everybody keeps acting as if every concern that they care about is at its absolute worst point ever.
Right.
And, you know, that I think it just makes it harder to have, you know, fruitful conversations.
Nick, I really appreciate you jumping on the phone with us. I hope we talk again.
Me too. Thank you.
Open, honest discussion. It's a start. Is it going to lead anywhere? That's what we've got to make sure happens. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Some of you have been trying to get in. We will continue this conversation after we check in on the news with Roger. 3:33 in the morning. 312-981-7200 is the call-in, is the text-in line. Let's continue the conversation about gun control. I will talk about the points that I don't completely disagree or do disagree with Nick about. I also want to talk a little bit about Las Vegas because both Roger and I have spent a decent amount of time there over the years. First, let's check the headlines. Go ahead, Raj. Tom Petty, I feel like, as famous as he is, has been able in some weird way to fly under the radar a little bit. Is that accurate?
Yeah. In the book, Jackson Browne describes him as reclusive and, you know, talks about his friendship with Tom. And at the end of what he has to say, he says, but really, I don't know him that well. And I think he's got a very small and tight inner circle. And as a public figure, he's always let the songs and the recordings do the work for him. And they've done a lot of good work for four decades. But you're not accustomed to seeing the life beyond the songs. So this is a bit of a first to go this deep. Among other things, the book is a bit of a study in pre-internet rock and roll culture, when you had fully developed regional scenes. So you could have something like Gainesville, where you had Don Felder and Bernie Ledden, who had gone to be in the Eagles, and Stephen Stills, who had went to Gainesville High. Down the road, the Allman Brothers, Lynyrd Skynyrd was opening up shows for Petty's band Mudcrutch. You could have, you know, there were radio stations, there was a network of clubs. Everything was there within the region. So these guys would have fairly developed careers within that area. And then if they wanted to go to the next level, which was the, you know, national, international level, that's when they'd leave. But Gainesville is one of these pockets. And, you know, the University of Florida being there, that made a difference. It was almost like a perfect place for incubation for this, you know, post-Beatles generation.
That's Warren Zanes. We interviewed him a couple of years ago. The book is called Petty, the Biography. Really good conversation with Warren. We'll play a little bit more later in the show, but pick that up if you get a chance. If you liked Tom Petty's music, if you're interested in his life, it's a very, very exhaustive biography on him, and you can find that whole interview at WGNradio.com. So our conversation with Nick Gillespie about the Second Amendment, what was frustrating me about a lot of that was that the conversation kept getting twisted to guns in general. And I don't think we need to talk about guns in general. Now, some people do. I got some text saying, screw the Second Amendment. It's enough already. I don't care about people and their hobbies. Let's get rid of it. You're not going to do that, A. B, I don't know if that's the real answer, is trying to get rid of all guns. I think we've seen that when there's any threat that guns are going to go away, people buy guns by the truckload. For 8 years, the NRA was telling you Obama and Hillary are coming after your guns. They didn't, but people kept buying them more and more and more. The bump stock becomes famous. They sell out of the bump stock because everybody now wants one before they get banned. So what I want to talk about and what I want us to focus on are these semi-automatic rifles, rifles that can hold a high magazine cartridge that can shoot 25 or 30 rounds, things like that. If those things weren't available, could Stephen Paddock have pulled this off? Now, Nick was arguing, well, there's 300 million guns out there. You're not going to get rid of them all. And so that's this type of way to twist the conversation into something else. And basically what he was saying is there's nothing we can really do. It happens rarely because people don't want their rights infringed upon, because we can't alter these rights because of one crazed gunman. That's not what we do. But why, I don't understand why, and I don't hear this conversation, why does the right to bear arms mean any arms that I can think of or make? Why isn't it limited to handguns or a hunting-type rifle? The guns he was using, you would have trouble telling me, have any real purpose. Now, I know for hobbyists, it's cool, and I'm sure it's fun to be able to shoot a gun, to be able to put a bump stock on it and shoot it repeatedly very quickly. I'm sure that's great. It doesn't mean it is a right that we have to absolutely have when it also is being used to do really terrible things. And I know it doesn't happen often, but it does happen. And it wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for that type of gun. If he just had a hunting rifle, how many, he still could have killed people. So yes, we can't necessarily completely prevent this from happening. Can we prevent him, hopefully, from killing 50-plus people? I would argue yes. You probably could. Now, maybe not. Maybe if he's just got a simple gun that he's reloading with a good scope and he's more like a sniper, maybe there's no way to get drawn to him. Maybe the sounds don't bring that security guard. Maybe the smoke alarms don't go off, or whatever we find out in the end is what really brought him down. Maybe it doesn't, and maybe he does pull this off. But I don't understand why. Somebody explain to me why we don't have better regulation on this type of firearm. To me, it's because the NRA, as Nick and I kind of talked about at the end of that conversation, they do not want any of the rights of gun owners infringed upon. No regulation, no limits to what they can and can't do, because they're worried it's a slippery slope, that if we start allowing regulations on certain types of guns, then there'll be other guns. Then it'll be other guns. It'll be other guns until the whole Second Amendment is threatened. And because we can't have that common sense conversation, this keeps happening. And I don't know if it's going to happen more and more. Maybe it's not. But I also wonder, when Nick's arguing, you listen, gun deaths are down, this is down, violent crimes are down, that's all great. I don't believe there's a great correlation between, because more people have guns, I don't believe criminals are walking around thinking, oh, these people might have guns, I'm not going to commit these crimes. The death penalty didn't seem to deter crime. I mean, I just find it hard to believe that criminals are walking around that worried about who else has a gun. I just don't think that's really what's going to change everything. 312-981-7200. 815 says, false argument. You cannot own any gun you want on your own. People are truly afraid of what our government will become if we limit the people's ability to bear arms. That's a false argument. We have 300 million guns out there. We have handguns galore. You're really worried about the government coming for you if you don't have. So that's what our concern truly is, that if we limit your ability to own semi-automatic rifles, then the government will know they could come take over. Does anybody believe, with what you have right now, the government couldn't come take over if they truly wanted to? That the government isn't armed to the teeth enough that you're not going to overpower them? Is that what we're really preparing for? We have to have the ability to buy and own these type of guns because of the government threat? Come on, people. 312-981-7200. Peggy, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
I do.
You do what?
You know, but I believe everybody that can have a gun should get one.
Why?
Well, I can give you one first-class example. The, what was it? It's the act that Truman signed in 1947, giving the CIA absolute security without accountability for anything they want to do, for any covert reason they want to. And they don't have to, they're not accountable to anyone. And as we all know, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
So that means that you need to have a rifle that can shoot 25 bullets within 30 seconds?
I figure anything you can get, you should get it. The other thing is we're not good about safeguarding any of our stuff. Remember the boxcar that they picked up just recently was in the Trib, was full of guns, and they stole it? They sell that to gangs. Congratulations, folks. That was a brilliant move. We're not safeguarding what we have. And as far as people having guns, you should be trained and know how to use it, because gangs have taught us this in Chicago. They can't shoot. They aim at one thing and they hit somebody else. So, you know, there are people that don't know how to use it, and I think there ought to be a restriction on that. Yes, you can have your 38, but we're going to make sure you know how to use the thing so you don't go shooting out lampposts and stuff. And if you're certifiably crazy, they may say you're crazy if you go for counseling. Most people have. And so, if they don't let them have guns, I think that's an imposition too.
All right, so Peggy, let me ask you real quick then. So
go ahead.
Stephen Paddock, it appears, and we don't know everything yet, and it's probably going to be a long time before we do, right? But from what it appears, he bought everything legally. He possibly did everything legal here. So you're okay with that? That's just kind of the cost of doing business, that there's nothing in some instances we can do because we don't want to limit our rights. So this is just the type of thing that happens?
First of all, you need to know that there are people that are in the armed services, vets and stuff, who know he wasn't a single shooter. There were multiple shooters.
Thank you, Peggy. I'm not going to start that crap, people. We're not going to start this black ops helicopter nonsense right now. Give me some evidence there's a second shooter, fine. But if you just believe the government just covers everything up and there's all this stuff going on, I don't have time for that. Rick, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
Good. What's going on, sir?
What's a lock do, Matt, on your house?
The lock on my house.
A lock keeps the honest person honest. The dishonest person wants to come in, they're going to come in. They'll be surprised if they try to do that at my house, because they'll be met with much resistance. Regulations won't work. I don't have an answer, Matt, but what I don't want people to do is start regulating everything. The man was obviously crazy. I applaud you for cutting the last person off and saying, no, there's no government conspiracy. I've not heard that. I've not heard that there's...
Oh, I've heard it. I heard it just this week. I'm out for a beer with a guy on the board. He said, well, there was a second shooter on the fourth floor. And I said, what do you mean? Oh, there's video. No. There's this. There's that.
Thank you. I don't want to jump in all that.
But Rick, let me ask you a question. So you're jumping right away to, and I understand you have a firearm to protect your home. And that, to me, in my mind, and I'm not an authority, but in my mind, that's a lot of what the Second Amendment is about, the right to protect you and your family. And I absolutely don't want your right infringed upon. Now, do you need a semi-automatic weapon to protect your home? I think a guy like you, Rick, it sounds like, with a handgun, which you can get to quickly and have nearby and things like that, that's my guess is what you're protecting the home with. Are you afraid, though? Is that it? Is that a lot of what this is, that if we start regulating too heavily these other guns that can inflict mass casualties, that you're afraid that once we allow that, then they start coming after other things? Is that what the problem is? Or do you believe,
Absolutely. Matt, let me ask you something. How in the world do you know what I have to protect my house with?
I don't. That's my guess.
But you're assuming
right.
that a handgun is going to do me just fine. Oh, Rick, You seem like a normal human being, a normal person. A handgun's going to do you okay. Do you understand what's wrong with that statement? You are assuming that what you think I should have is fine for the rest of the world. No, I want to legally have whatever the law tells me I can have.
Sure.
I told you I don't have the answer to this horrific crime, but government and regulations and, unfortunately, like I told the gal who answered the phone, the distance between, there is no common sense here. You said something about common sense. Unfortunately, there is no common sense, and I adamantly admit I don't have the answer, but taking my guns away, regulating what I can and can't do legally, because I am an absolutely, well, 99% sane person, you can't tell me that, oh, Rick, a handgun will do you just fine.
You're right. I don't know what's coming at your house, and I don't know what it takes to protect you. You're right.
Don't tell me that. That's what makes them so mad. Matt, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate it. I'm sorry, though, people. You need more than a shotgun. You need more than a handgun to protect your house. What the hell is coming after your house? And you're right. I can't tell you what you want to protect your house with, but we do have regulations. We do have laws. We have all sorts of things. You can't protect your house with a nuclear weapon. That's not allowed. I don't think you're allowed to have a bazooka.
You mean I got to get rid of my... Oh, never mind.
Yeah. You get that back on that black market Craigslist, Raj, because that's going to be trouble. The taxes you're going to pay when you sell
that.
Yeah,
but the markdown now that it's been used.
It's been used?
Once it's been... Well, you know, it's been handled.
I hope you didn't use the nuclear weapon.
It left the lot. You know, it's like a car.
I got it shipped secondhand from North Korea. Harold, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning, sir.
Hey, guys. How you doing? You got a couple hours?
I don't, but go ahead. Knock me out.
All right, do what we can. Well, there's so many different directions, you know, you can go. I'll tell you what. Have you been to Las Vegas before?
I go to Las Vegas every year. I stay in the Mandalay Bay. I was concerned for a day or two that I might have stayed in that room. Once I saw that it was a Vista suite, I knew for sure that I had not been in it. But I stay in a suite every year because we do videotaping for a veterinary conference. So I'm in those end suites every single year. And it freaked the hell out of me when I saw where it took place. And I've looked down every year upon that area where the Harvest Fest is. Not every year, because not every year are we in the same corner. But many years I've looked down on that and wondered what it's a huge big just parking lot is what it looks like most of the year when it's not being used, with some bleachers and some stage. So you see, I've always seen that it could be set up for a concert and wondered, do they do concerts there? But I've looked down at that exact angle many times.
And how about you, Roger?
I lived there for 3.5 years. My daughter was born there.
All right. I'm maybe a different character than half the people in the world. I'm probably about the same as about the other half. When I went there one time, and you know, I'm like, I want to see, and I don't gamble, I don't drink, and I was with my girlfriend, so I don't go to see girls dance.
The gentlemanly clubs. We know what you're saying, Harold.
So what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna go see, you know, the sights and stuff. I see some shows, magic or whatever. So when I get there, I grab a handful of these different, as I see different places, I grab some of these guides, Las Vegas guide, what to do, you know, Las Vegas after midnight or whatever. I don't know what it was, but
sure.
I grab a bunch of these things and then get back to the hotel, and we pack the cameras and the, you know, what clothes we're wearing tomorrow and whatever. And then next day I start looking through these guides, and every other page, and I'm not exaggerating, in some cases, 2 pages, 3 pages in a row, gun shops, fire MAC-10, you know,
yeah.
Fire and Uzi. And I'm like, holy cow, you can actually go there and fire these things and whatever. And there were hundreds and hundreds of shops. And guess what? All the people that have, you know, that have dozens of guns in their house, not one of them stopped this guy from firing. So everybody's like, oh, I can protect my house and whatever. It couldn't even protect, you know, Mandalay Bay.
Yeah, but all right. So, God, Harold, now you're going to make me argue the other side. What are you doing to me? Here's the thing. And that is this whole separate, oh, if we're more armed to the teeth, then everybody's safer because everybody else is afraid. This is an anomaly, though, because if everybody at the Harvest Festival had a gun and was ready to go, You've seen the video. There's no way to know what in the hell you're trying to defend yourself against. It's in the dark. It's coming from far away. There's nothing you can do. So I wouldn't argue against guns for this. All I'm trying to argue against is having those that heavy weaponry available to the public. I don't see any reason other than because it's my right, because I want it. There's no other good reason to have it. And you know what? It's funny, Harold, you mentioned just a couple of years ago, when I was out there and we were doing some videotaping on the strip, and a bus comes by and the whole side of the bus is come shoot an Uzi. And it's got a woman on there with the goggles on and the big Uzi in her hand. And the funny thing is I'm okay with that because there is,
It's not your gun. You're just play acting with it.
It's a regulated place that has the gun legally that you would assume everybody's trained. Here's a controlled environment where you could go. You want to recreationally shoot that and see what it feels like. There you go. There's your opportunity. I'm okay with that. What scares me more is just the availability to have these, and our defense of it is for recreational purposes. Hey, because it's cool. Because I want to. And because it's my protected right, I know we have a right to bear arms. Why do we have that right? If it's to protect ourselves, to protect our homes, I think there's limits to what we absolutely need to do that. I think it's okay to set limits, just like we set speed limits and other things. We regulate things. I know people don't like big government. I know we don't like government telling us what to do. But if there's, and I know, you know, Nick was arguing, hey, this doesn't happen that often. It's not happening that often. We can't go changing everything because of a couple incidents. Well, there have been a number of incidents now, and they're very scary. And I know it's because of the media and that we're around it all the time. We get to see so much. Everybody's got a cell phone now, so we see all these different videos of it. But why are we not doing anything to try to stop this type of thing from happening? That's what's amazing to me. Newtown happened. All those kids get killed. We don't change anything. Those guns were bought legally by his mother. He gets them and he goes and does that. If his mom doesn't have those guns, he probably still ends up killing some people. He doesn't end up killing 27. Why do we do nothing to prevent the mass casualties? 312-981-7200. I know there's a lot of you waiting to get in. I will take your calls after we check the news next on 720 WGN.
Tom Petty talks about it being the Beatles, and you know, he's just, maybe he's one of the last guys we're really going to hear say that, but it was the first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show that Tom told you that was the moment that I knew that it could be done, that music was this incredible thing, and we played music, and we loved it, but we didn't know what to do with it until we saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. Why was that such a changing point for those guys? Because, hey, if we can just get three other guys together, we can end up there? Was that the idea?
Well, I mean, Petty starts before that. He gets the chance to meet Elvis Presley on a movie set.
Right.
He's 10 years old, and he meets Elvis. But the big difference between Elvis and the Beatles is when people looked at Elvis, he appeared to be more of, you know, a god among mortals. You didn't look at Elvis and think, I could be that. It gave you all the fire. It gave you all the desire, but it didn't give you a clue how to do it. And when the Beatles came, they brought it down to this human scale with that, you know, that kind of boy next door quality. But it was just a signal to young America that, you know, everybody was watching that Ed Sullivan Show, but the message was, this is for the young people, and you can do this. And I personally don't think we'll ever have anything like that again, where overnight people's minds just got turned on and all these bands. I mean, it's not just that they start combing their bangs down. They start rock and roll bands, and it's an explosion across the country. That's the garage band era. You know, that's what Springsteen came out of, Billy Joel, Tom Petty, Elvis Costello. It's a lot of major artists just get their fuse lit.
That's Warren Zanes. I spoke with him 2 years ago for Petty, the biography. He talked extensively with Tom Petty and all of his bandmates and friends for that book. It's a really good read. You can find it at bookstores and online. I'm sure Warren Zanes is the author. Petty, the biography. You can also hear that whole interview at WGNradio.com. Of course, we've been talking a lot about the Second Amendment and what should or shouldn't be done. And you're calling in at 312-981-7200 to chat about that. Patrick, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning, sir.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Good. What's going on?
I just have one question for you. You have a wife and children,
yep.
Correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
People are breaking into your house.
Right.
Do you want to have a six shooter, a nine shooter, or do you want to have something that's got? Because again, you have no idea how many people are breaking into your house.
You're right.
And how qualified they are in shooting. What do you want to have?
So explain to me though, Patrick. So what am I going to have? I'm going to have like an AK-47, and I'm just going to start spraying bullets?
No. You're going to be a qualified shooter who's not going to be like,
okay,
you're still moving. I'm going to shoot.
All right. So
you're going to get your gun, and then you're going to go to a shooting range. And you're going to ask for a professional to teach you.
Okay. So
how do I use this weapon?
Why would I not do that with a handgun? What's the max? I understand a six-shooter, an old-fashioned six-shooter, but if I had a Glock or something, how many bullets does that hold?
The fact that you don't know the answer to that question is a problem. You can have a Glock that handles nine, and beyond.
Nine and beyond?
Yes.
So what's like the max you could have
in a video on Facebook where this dude shoots, I think it's 250 bullets. He has two Glocks with automatic barrels and he just blasts and it's like 250 in 30 seconds.
All right. Well, Patrick, let's go back to hold on. The scenario that you set up was I'm at my house and there's somebody breaking in. So
right. And you do not need that Glock that shoots 250 bullets in 30 seconds.
Right, I don't. But you're saying, you don't want to just have a six shooter because you don't know how many people are coming in or what they're going to do, et cetera.
Correct.
But
correct.
Could I have a Glock like next to my that I can get to easily that has 20 bullets in it?
Oh, my God. There are so many compartment inventions that you would be blown away if you actually looked it up online.
Sure, I believe you. But what I'm trying to argue, Patrick, is that I don't want to have an AK-47 in my house necessarily to protect my house.
Again, it depends where you live, right?
Sure.
I live in Rolling Meadows. I don't need a Glock. I don't need an AK-47 to protect my house.
Right.
But if you live on the south side of Chicago and there's some stuff going on, you might need that. I mean, it depends. We live in a huge place, man. United States of America, 50 states plus Puerto Rico and whatever. You need to consider the situation. There's a reason that in the Constitution, they actually incorporated assault rifles.
They didn't incorporate assault rifles into the Second Amendment.
It's in there.
It's not.
It's in the Constitution. They have assault rifles.
It is not, Patrick.
Something to that side.
Patrick, it's not in the Constitution.
It might not be exact. Okay, either way.
No, it's not either way. It's not either way. Patrick, that's what gets me frustrated right here. Hold on 1 second. You can't say it's in the Constitution and then say either way.
If I may quote.
That is ridiculous. Because you are making the fake news argument. Oh, it's in the Constitution. Oh, well, either way. No, BS. Don't do that. Don't say it's in the Constitution if it's not true. This is the problem we're having right now in America. We just keep saying whatever we want to say until people just go, okay, it is what it is. It's not in the Constitution. It's not in the Second Amendment. There are arguments over whether the Founding Fathers knew about the possibility of an assault weapon or a multiple repeat shooter. There's been a story that came out this week that says that was all false and they didn't know that. I don't know what they did or didn't know. But if you read the Second Amendment, it does not say anything about assault weapons. It doesn't say anything about automatic weapons. They didn't have them.
May I quote it?
Please.
This is a Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. It is referring to a well-regulated militia. It could be interpreted as being today's military in the United States, a well-regulated militia, and the National Guard. And the continuation of this is, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. When the Constitution was put together, there was no military. There was no Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, National Guard, Coast Guard. There were Americans who were volunteers into the Army. And in order to be ready to defend the country, they needed to have firearms in order to protect the country.
And that can be debated by many today as to what was truly meant, what was not truly meant.
True.
People
want to
look at the second half, that the right to bear arms shall not be infringed.
But it is true that when the Constitution was written, there were no machine guns. There were no semi-automatic rifles.
Right.
You had to load a pellet and gunpowder every time and then fire the weapon.
Yeah, they couldn't possibly envision the technology of today and what was going to happen, 200 years down the road.
Not at all.
And I'm okay with arguing, hey, we have a right to bear arms. I don't want to get rid of your right to bear arms. I don't love the idea, but I don't want to get rid of it. I want to get rid of your seeming right to own a piece of equipment that can kill masses of people. I don't understand why we don't regulate that. We should regulate that. This does happen. And you can twist and say, well, handguns are the real problem. Yes, handguns are an amazing problem. They really are. But if we're going to keep the Second Amendment, handguns are going to stay. So we have to do other things to prevent handgun violence. But Stephen Paddock, by what we know now, everything he did was legal. I don't think there's a regulation you could put in place that necessarily stops what he did. Not an easy one. Now, if every time you walked into a hotel, you had to be patted down and go through metal detectors, okay. Are we really going to do that? No. Are we going to never hold an outdoor concert again? No. There are things that just can't necessarily be done. What could be done possibly to prevent this, and even this might not completely prevent it, but we could outlaw the sale of semi-automatic, high magazine weaponry. Weapons that can shoot as far, shoot as big of rounds of ammunition, shoot quickly. Even if you outlaw the bump stock, he still could have gotten off a ton of shots.
Mm-hmm.
That helped him out, there's no doubt. And the NRA is going to try to look good by saying, yeah, we should regulate that. That's their big, their big carrot they're throwing out there. Hey, yeah, we should talk about bump stocks. Good. But if you say, what about the semi-automatic weapons? They're not going to have that conversation. Why do we need to own those? Every answer is because I want to. Patrick's arguing you want to defend your house with that. I'm not going to defend my house with that. Maybe I defend my house with a Glock or something like that. Where are you going to keep? I got four kids at home. You have four kids at home. You want to just have a six shooter? I have four kids at home. I want to have an AK-47 that I can get to easily when some assholes are breaking into my house. How safe is that? How much more likely are my kids to end up accidentally getting into that ever than somebody to break into my house? How many gun deaths do we have a year? How many times do we hear about a 2-year-old shooting a 4-year-old because they got into the weapon? And of course you should have it in a safe place, and of course you should have it locked. But if you're talking about defending your house, you also have to have it accessible and easy to get to. And that's not easy either. And it's a lot harder to lock up an AK-47, I would think, than it is to lock up your Glock or your 9mm or whatever.
I just think of when are automatic rifles,
semi-automatic? We do not allow automatic.
I understand. So when are, in what situation are semi-automatic rifles necessary?
That's the question I'm asking. And some people that want to defend it will say, hey, because I want it, because I want this, I want that. If we're talking about defending our house, defending our person, conceal and carry, things like that, I don't understand why we need that weapon. Now, if you're going to argue, hey, I want to be prepared for when things go down, when the government does this or that, okay, that's your prerogative. But I believe that a reasonable conversation could be had to say that type of weapon is not necessary and that doesn't infringe upon your Second Amendment rights. Quick break and more of your calls. 312-981-7200. Norman from Denver. You've been on hold for a while. I'll get you next, buddy. 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. It's been a good conversation with you all. I appreciate you all jumping in tonight. Norman's coming in all the way from Denver, Colorado. Hey, Norman, how are you this morning?
Fine, and how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling in. What do you want to say, sir?
My solution has nothing to do with the Second Amendment. It has nothing to do with gun rights. The problem that they had, well, after 9/11, one of the security measures that was put into place, and you could argue as to its effectiveness, is on airplanes, they put in where the cockpit doors are closed during flight.
Mm-hmm.
Theory being that people can't approach the pilot while the plane is in motion, and therefore this plane is supposedly safer. The problem that happened at this venue was that it took a while for the people to even figure out where the bullets were coming from.
Mm-hmm.
My solution, therefore, I first thought of one of those utility trucks with a bucket. That ain't going to get up to the 18th floor. The other solution
is the 32nd floor.
So ladder. That's not going to get up to the 18th floor. If you put up one of those construction cranes and you put a sharpshooter in the construction crate, I just want to be safe when I go to the venue. I'm not interested in carrying guns. I'm not interested in doing anything else with the Second Amendment. And you will put one of those people in a construction crate or however you want to configure it, maybe one crane on one side and one crane on the other side. You take a building like the Mandalay Bay, you could see whether the glass is going to be broken out of there because it's so uniform when you look at it. And you put the guy in the construction crane and something happens, it's his responsibility to take the guy out before the guy has an opportunity to do anything or at least let the authorities know what's going on. They couldn't even see what was going on until they realized what was happening. It took, a certain period of time, which that delayed the reaction.
So
if you get the people, and if you have a venue you constantly use over and over again, the best thing to do is to put up those construction crates, put the people, the sharpshooters, into it, and you say your responsibility is just to watch the buildings and watch just
Norman,
watch anything that
hold on one hurt. Second. Norman, can we talk about this for a second? Let's talk about this rationally. So at that festival, what you have is you got – and what are we talking about, just one guy up in a bucket crane? Because not only did you have Mandalay Bay, you have Luxor, you have other hotels, probably four or five hotels that overlook that venue. So are you thinking
to do one guy or one crane? Or I mean, this is my idea that could be developed as the thing goes on.
So that people can still own semi-automatic rifles and still have this freedom. We are going to, for any outdoor venue now, so we've got this at the Harvest Festival, any other outdoor concert at Vegas, here in Chicago at Wrigley Field, we're going to have that for every single game, at Soldier Field, because across the street there are condo buildings, so we got to have that for that, for Lollapalooza, for the Indy 500, for anything where there's anything overlooking an outdoor festival now, we need to have guys in bucket trucks trained to be snipers.
Well, yeah, I mean,
and so Stephen Paddock, who
you gotta put the people
so let's assume, Norman, that Stephen Paddock knows that there is a guy in a truck, in a bucket somewhere who's overlooking everything. Isn't that the first person he shoots?
Well, no, that we would say, well, maybe I better go elsewhere because this is being protected. Part of it is a psychological game that you play with these people. You might not even put anybody in there, but the fact that that thing is there and the fact that they know that there might be somebody in there who can take them out before they do anything would most likely, I mean, that's the whole purpose of security systems, is you want to take these people and move them somewhere else. And if they know that there's a guy in this crane or whatever device you want to use, then they're going to say, well, maybe I better not do it because I'm not sure what this is going to do. That's why he looked at several venues before he chose this one.
I don't think he looked at several venues because he was worried about the security and who was going to shoot back at him. It sounds more like he was looking at his angles or whatever. Who knows what he was looking at? We don't know. We don't know anything about it, but I just really have trouble believing that a guy up in one cherry picker is going to prevent this all from happening. I assume that what the guy would do is take that person out first or try to. and then move on. I just can't believe we're going to decide, no, everybody should have their right to own something that can shoot and kill mass amounts of people. The way we'll protect them is having somebody else who will try to take them out before they can start killing people. That's our solution. That's where we're at. 312-981-7200. Let's check the news, and then we'll get back to it after this.
She's a good girl, loves her mama, loves Jesus. In America too.
There was a time where he realized a band is what I need to be in, and I will never not be in a band again.
Yeah, what people often don't see is the prehistory to a star's success. Because, you know, a guy like Petty, he writes songs that have an ease about them. He's got a cool way of carrying himself. He just looks like he's kind of always been there. So it obscures the fact of how much work he put into it. But I think the guys who end up having the longer, deeper careers, what sets them apart is their capacity to live through disappointments. You know, getting record deals but selling no records, bands breaking up, members leaving. You know, most people pack their bags and go back home after a few disappointments. The guys who end up making lots of records, who we're still talking about today, they just had a capacity each time a disappointment came to dust themselves off and go after the next disappointment.
With Tom Petty, what do you credit that to, that the upbringing makes you so resilient, or just, I'm not going back to any other life, I don't care how many disappointments I encounter, I'm going to do this until it works?
Well, I don't think he had much to go back to, and you know, not to be overly simplistic about it, but when a kid is beaten, you know, starting around age five, they can't make sense of the world. You know, the person who's supposed to be taking care of them it's a Jekyll and Hyde thing. They might be taking care of them one minute, and they might be the thing that they need to be protected from the next. And you're at five, your brain is being developed. You're kind of finding your place in society where you just don't have enough to go on. And so when that happens, you're really kind of at odds with the world. And some people, they just kind of die inside. And in other people, it kicks off some ambitions to in a way prove that they're worth more than a situation like the one they walked into. And I think even at 65, Tom Petty's got some of that in him. And, you know, and why wouldn't he, you know?
Unfortunately, I only had a couple years left in him. I recorded that two Novembers ago with Warren Zanes, Petty, the biography. It's a rich read about Tom Petty. It's worth picking up. You can hear the whole interview at WGNradio.com. Traded last summer, Artemi Panarin makes his return to the UC Blackhawks Blue Jackets. That's tonight at 7 on WGN-TV. Are you struggling to get a deep, restful sleep? If you think about it, when was the last time you replaced your pillow? Your tossing and turning may be a result of that flat, worn-out pillow that you've been sleeping on for years. So try MyPillow and join the millions of people who are getting the best sleep of their lives. You can try one out absolutely risk-free. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-299-9579. MyPillow is offering their signature four-pack special at 50% off. Just use promo code WGN at checkout. They'll even throw in free shipping. On top of a 10-year warranty, MyPillow is so confident you'll love your new pillow, they'll give you a 60-night money-back guarantee. So sleep on it. If you don't believe it's the absolute best pillow out there, return it for a full refund. Try a MyPillow. See why customers have described them as life-changing. Call 800-299-9579 or log on to MyPillow.com. Use promo code WGN. Mark is in Joliet at 312-981-7200. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning, man. First off, I want to thank you for cutting people off when it gets off topic. It's really good. That needs to be done all more often on radio. So
well, I appreciate that. I apologize when I do that, but sometimes we got to keep the conversation moving in the right direction. Sometimes, yeah. So go ahead. What did you want to say?
Well, I think what it comes down to is, I think one of the things we have to remember is what semi-automatic is. I mean, if you say, okay, I'm going to protect myself with a Glock in the house. Mm-hmm. That Glock is a semi-automatic handgun.
Okay.
Okay, it's one pull, one shot, it reloads, it's ready to go again.
Okay.
Just like all these other rifles and everything, okay? So you're dealing, when you say semi-automatic weapons, you're dealing with a very large range of weapons, okay? I have a 45 caliber Kimber handgun. I have a 22 caliber AR-15. Okay, that AR-15 looks very scary. It's black, looks like it's an assault rifle.
Yeah, I just saw one online tonight. I was looking earlier tonight at Cabela's website, and I think that I saw that online, and it looks scary. It looks like something that, like, you know, in the movies I'd see the Israeli army walking around the airport with, right?
Right, and I can shoot as fast with my 45 as I can with my AR-15. Okay, my AR-15 is .22 caliber. Not gonna do much damage. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even have bought it. I won it in a raffle. I never would have paid money for that gun. I use it for shooting cans out on the farm.
Okay.
So, because it's .22 caliber, it's not gonna do any damage really. I mean it's gonna do damage. If I still could be wrong, but
right.
It's not gonna do to someone if I shoot you in the arm with a .22 caliber gun. And shoot you in the arm with my 45 caliber handgun, the 45 is going to do a lot more damage.
Okay.
Okay. So it's all perception is a lot what we have. So
let me ask you, and you can tell, Mark, I don't know my guns. What Stephen Paddock was using was not even then what your 22 is, right? He was using a higher grade of weapon, because your 22 probably couldn't shoot for 400 yards then, can it, or could it?
Well, I guess it depends on what I loaded the bullet with. I mean, what you need to know is the rifle is going to give you a more accurate shot, number one. Number two, it all depends on what size, what power bullet you have or grain bullet you have, how much gunpowder is in there.
Mm-hmm.
If you load something down and it's not a high grain, it's not going to go very far.
Would your 45 handgun shoot 400 yards if he had just stood there with that gun?
Probably not to the extent of what a rifle is shooting, because I can't load it with that much. It's a shorter bullet. I can't load it with that much grain. That much gunpowder in the bullet. If I were to reload the bullet,
and that's the thing. And how often would you have to reload that handgun? I mean, he was able to sit there and get off a bunch of rounds. You wouldn't be able to do that with a handgun, correctly?
It all depends. I mean, it all depends on what the handgun holds. Like the guy, when you asked him, you know, how much does a Glock hold? He said 9, as a fact. It doesn't go that way. I've got two Kimbers. I mean, one holds 9 plus 1. The other one holds 7 plus 1, which is 7 in the magazine and one in the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
So it all depends on the magazine you put in there. I can go right now to the store and get a larger magazine that's going to stick out the bottom of my handgun. It's not going to make, I mean, I won't be able to steel carry it for sure,
mm-hmm.
but it will be able to hold quite a few rounds. I mean, it all depends on what you put in it. And I can load and reload it just as fast, if not faster, with a handgun than, you know, you press a button, the magazine pops out, you slam another one in, and it pulls, you know, and fire away.
Yeah.
So
in your mind,
probably reload faster with that.
In your mind, Mark, so my argument is we need to get rid of these semi-automatic rifles that can shoot powerful, you know, that can inflict mass casualties, that can shoot from 400 yards away, that can do the type of things that we keep hearing about. Do you think that my argument is kind of a false equivalency then, because there are all sorts of other guns in Newtown? If that guy would have just had three handguns with him, he probably could have done the same amount of damage. If these other guns that are available would have been in Stephen Paddock's possession instead of what he had, he still could have done the damage. Would you make that argument that Matt, you can't just call, oh, if we get rid of the semi-automatics, this doesn't happen. It's not how it works.
Right. Well, here's the thing. If he had handguns from that distance, he's not going to do the kind of damage. I agree. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're never going to get rid of rifles. That's where you hold your larger ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
If he had handguns, he could have done that much, if not more, damage if he got into that venue. I'm sure. And that's if he only had handguns, he'd have to be in that venue. And, you know, you talked earlier about regulations, too, and everybody brings up, we need to regulate this. We do regulate handguns. We regulate that. What happened is that the regulations failed in this situation. From my understanding, I'm not an investigator, and I'm not going to say anything for fact and say there was a sex shooter and all this other stuff, but from what I've heard is that he bought 33 guns in 11 months, okay? Unless he's got a dealer license or something like that, 33 guns in 11 months should have thrown a red flag anywhere. There should have been somebody visiting him going, why are you doing this, buddy?
But is there right now, and I don't know this, Mark, is there a database? Is there a way for somebody to know if he's visiting a bunch of different people? Unless he's seeing the same guy over and over, is there any way for anybody to know that he's made all those purchases in 11 months?
Now, I'm not going to say for fact because I don't run that department of the government, but I believe so. I mean, I have a FOID card. When I go in and get a handgun, I have to go in, or any gun, I have to go in, give them my information, fill out a form. They take that form, they run a background check on me. And then I have to wait 3 days or 4 days or whatever, how long it takes for that process to go through. You know, I've had to wait as long as 5 days if the system's slow or whatever, or if the state's behind in checking them. Now, you would think as a normal thinking human being that they would have some way of pulling up your FOID card or your name and realizing how much you have purchased in the past year or two. There should be some record of that. As a normal thinking human being, I would think that would be easy enough to do. In the day and age of computers, sure. Should be able to one button press it. Have a report.
Yeah. You would think, and maybe there is, maybe there isn't. Mark, I got to take a quick break because I got to get somebody else in here too, and we're almost up on the morning show. I appreciate the call, though. I want to try to get one more in before we get out of here, but we're getting behind on break. So 312-981-7200, back in a moment on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200, I appreciate everybody jumping in tonight. Let's see if I can get a couple more quick calls in. Joey is calling in all the way from Ohio. Good morning, Joey. How are you?
Morning. How are you, my good man?
We're good. What did you want to say, sir?
Well, just wanted to talk about the Las Vegas stuff and my take on it.
Yeah, you had something to say. Go ahead.
Apologies, but for now, like my personal opinion as someone who's handled guns, it's not only about regulation. Like, as much as I hate to say it, humans are going to find ways to hurt each other no matter what.
Sure.
It comes down to the fact of whether you believe that the average human is a good person or not. I mean, look at the roads. Look at cars. But alongside that, I must say that amendments are amendments. We can't change them for the future. That's what the founding fathers knew. They knew that no matter what, things will change.
Thomas Jefferson said the Constitution is a living, breathing document. So, yes, and we have changed over the years. It's not easy to make changes to the Constitution. You need, three-fourths of the country, two-thirds, whatever. You need a lot to make an amendment and to make changes to our Constitution. But you're right. It is a living, breathing document, and sometimes we need to relook at it. I don't know that we need to relook at it. I don't think we need to get rid of the Second Amendment. I think we need to tighten up the regulations on what we can and can't own. And I know that a lot of you don't like that because you don't want those rights infringed upon. And I just don't understand. There are so many regulations. There are so many things we are very careful about how we handle. I have to, kids can't go buy spray paint. You can't go buy certain antihistamines or whatever at the drugstore. There's somebody texted about, I guess everybody forgot about Timothy McVeigh. So because Timothy McVeigh used fertilizer, everybody should be able to own their guns because they'll just find something, some other way to do it. I'm not sure, but I believe it's probably tougher to buy a truck full of fertilizer right now than it is for me to order a gun online from Cabela's and go pick it up in the next few days. I could be wrong about that. Last caller tonight, Rich, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, the thing that bothers me is as soon as something like this happens, this always comes up. It goes straight to the gun debate. Let me preface this with, I am not a gun owner, never have been. But the thing that bothers me is that it basically takes all the focus off of the people who perpetrated the crimes, and now it's just about guns and regulations. And you know what? We don't talk about mental illness. We don't talk about just the fact that there's pure evil in this world. I think the bottom line is the reason for the misplaced blame. We're blaming basically an inanimate object that if you put it on a table for 100 years, it would not go off and hurt anybody. I think the reason we misplaced this blame is because of fear, because we know that there's pure evil in this world, and we will never be able to completely stop this. And I think that scares a lot of people, and I think that's why we misplace our blame, and we take it off of the people who've done it, and we put it on to these guns and weapons. And I'm not saying not to regulate or whatever. I mean, I'm just saying that the simple fact is that it's never going to stop. And you're talking about, okay, well, maybe if he didn't have a semi-automatic weapon, he only would have been able to kill a few of these, and we would have saved a few lives. You know, I agree. A few lives is great, but let's look at regulation. How about we could save 480,000 lives a year? What if I told you that? What if I told you we could save 1,300 lives a day by changing a law? What would you think of that?
Well, you know, it depends on the law. If you're saying if nobody drove cars, we'd save 1,300 lives a day or something like that, then we have to, of course, there are certain things we're not going to change. But America needs cars to get around. We don't need semi-automatic weapons, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Matt, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about something you would think would be a no-brainer. And I'm talking about cigarettes. Kills 480,000 people a year, 1,300 a day. And we're not talking about infringing, but changing that and making that illegal. We're not talking about even trampling on anybody's civil or constitutional rights like we're talking about right now. Why is that? Why do we pick and choose? Ephedra killed 100 people, and they took it off the shelves.
Because how many people are killing other people with cigarettes? We have infringed upon the smokers' rights. We don't allow them to smoke in restaurants. They're not allowed within 20 feet of the building. As we learn about secondhand smoke, we put all these restrictions in. You don't walk into a restaurant anymore in a cloud of smoke. But in general, smokers are killing themselves. And the only reason the government cares at all, quite honestly, is because of the cost to the taxpayer to take care of them when they get sick. If everybody was just killing themselves with guns, you're right, this wouldn't be as big of a deal. But he killed 50 other people. He didn't go kill them with cigarettes. I would be calling for a ban on cigarettes if he went and killed 50 people with a cigarette.
I agree. But I'm just, my point is just the you know, we're talking about saving lives here, and I just don't understand how we pick and choose. Yes, I understand no one's hurting anybody else, but we're talking about saving lives and changing things that can save lives, and that to me is a no-brainer, and that's something that we could actually do, you know, and not infringe upon anybody's constitutional rights.
How is that infringing upon their right by telling them they're not allowed to smoke a cigarette? Why are you?
It's a drug. It's a drug. It can be made illegal.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. I think the big difference is there. It's mostly a choice you're making upon yourself. We warn you like crazy now. We tax the snot out of it to try to encourage you not to do it. But you're right. That's something else. That's something else too. We're out of time. We got to take a quick break and say hello to Orion Samuelson next here on 720 WGN.